Today I want to talk about this idea, load-bearing beliefs. I've got a hyphen in between the first two words, load-bearing beliefs. When we try to heal conditions in our lives, we're trying to become whole. Being whole, in an electromagnetic sense, may be to be in the state where our bonding and our rejecting are equal, so they're in balance. The words heal and whole have the same root word. So maybe this balanced state is the real secret to healing. Not fighting and not killing whatever has been declared to be the enemy. The war on cancer, the war on this, the war on that, you got to fight it. Maybe that's not the secret. Maybe becoming balanced with regard to that situation is the secret. Last week, I was sent a diagram of possible patterns of healing issues. It was interesting to me. The diagram showed a top symptom with several underlying levels of issues. Underneath that was another level of issues, and underneath that, another level of issues. The goal proposed was to heal the topmost issues and then work downward to the deeper levels, healing each one in turn until all levels of all issues were healed. Even though I've used different structures as images, this one seemed valid to me as well. My images that I've used in the past include this idea of a keystone in an arch. That keystone puts a kind of a dispersion of pressure physically to both sides of the arch, and it makes it stay there. So removing that keystone causes the arch, the structure, to crumble. The other thing that I've talked about, the image, is log jams. And in this scenario, it is the idea that there was originally a log that started the jam. It, for one reason or another, I think resistance, it started to block other logs. So if we can find the one log that is holding the log jam in place, and we can remove it, then it will allow all the other logs or energy patterns to move downstream to resume their natural energetic flow. Years ago on television, I watched some TV program in which they were going to show how a building in Las Vegas, a high-rise, was to be demolished using explosives, and so then it was going to be cleared and they were going to erect another building on that same site. In that case, the placement of the explosives was so precise in the building, throughout the building, and the sequence which one went off when was so precise that it caused the building to drop right down in place. It didn't explode outward. And the reason for that, of course, nobody wanted to have flying debris and bricks and glass and steel flying out, damaging other properties or hurting other people. So this explosion caused the building just all of a sudden, boom, to crumble right in place. I've been involved in a couple of home improvement projects over the years that involved removing walls, taking off the wallboard, and also removing the ceilings, exposing the structure underneath in both of those cases. It was especially important not to remove load-bearing walls for the reason that if I did, then other things that were being supported by that load-bearing wall would be vulnerable to collapse. And so now ceilings could collapse, the sides of the building could collapse, and so on. In the case of demolishing the building in Las Vegas that I just described, finding and weakening the load-bearing structures was actually the goal. If they could precisely place these things where they knew the ultimate weights were being supported, and they could remove that piece of the building, then the collapse of the building was guaranteed. When I think of a person's identity, I consider it to be a structure. If a person needs or wants a huge renovation in their life, and most of us want some renovations for sure, what we need to do is find what needs to be removed, what we've put in place that needs to be removed, and maybe what other load-bearing beliefs need to be inserted in the proper places. I think of our self-esteem as being the totality of our self-view, which contains beliefs that can be thought of as outdated, non-functioning fixtures within the structure. The basic building blocks of our lives, I'll say, are images plus emotions, which then, through practice, we turn into beliefs. Very fundamental beliefs are what I call load-bearing beliefs. They hold up our self-image. You probably have experienced this internally, or you've seen it in action, is abrupt attempts at damaging or removing a load-bearing belief from a person is going to trigger rejection. And history has shown that people will kill other people when they feel that their load-bearing beliefs are under attack. People will kill other people if they feel that their beliefs are threatened. So, how many load-bearing beliefs does a person need to support an aspect of their identity? I don't know. That may not even be a good question, since I don't know how many aspects or even what an aspect of an identity would be. I mean, what would we consider that? I like to use my 12 worlds model as a framework for a lot of different ways to view human activity. As an example, looking at the physical world, I can see enormous number of aspects. And I just thought of manual dexterity as being one aspect. Range of motion in a person's shoulder joints might be another. Like, oh yeah, okay, Those are aspects, yep, of the physical world. But maybe manual dexterity wouldn't be an aspect associated with a load-bearing belief for you or me, or maybe even most people. But for a surgeon or a dentist or a professional pianist, a sculptor, maybe manual dexterity and their belief about it is in fact load-bearing, because that is really supporting their ability to earn a living, support themselves, support a family, and so on. Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers in American folklore would have had load-bearing beliefs about their physical abilities to move their bodies on the dance floors in time with music. If you see them on YouTube and watch a video of their dancing or you old movie, it is astonishing. Teenagers with beliefs about their awkwardness have been standing against the walls at high school dances for generations and generations. Load-bearing beliefs let Fred and Ginger dance, and load-bearing beliefs prevented some teenagers from ever dancing at all. Maybe this statement is true. If you can repeatedly do something with increasing proficiency, you have and are developing load-bearing beliefs. If that statement is true, maybe this one is too. If you can't do something with increasing proficiency, you have and you are developing load-bearing beliefs that result in a structure you do not really want. Load-bearing beliefs, by their very nature, have got to be strong and got to be rigid. Nobody is building a building with rubber walls and rubber 2x4s and rubber supports. That's not happening, of course. These load-bearing beliefs, they carry weight. They're essential to the structure, and consequently, we've got to defend them. In human terms, our beliefs are about us, and they're about us in relation to other people and things. In other words, how do we feel about ourselves, and how do we feel about other people's feelings about us? Now, I suppose it's possible that our beliefs are about other people exclusively, but I doubt this. We judge other people from the central point of our own identity, our ego. We interpret ourselves as more than or less than others. We look up to them, or we look down at them, or we look right across at them as equals. We bond with people based upon our feelings, and we reject people based upon our feelings. In all these cases, we refer to our own thoughts, our own feelings, our own experiences, and our own beliefs to decide whether we should bond with that person or reject that person, bond with those others or reject those others. Anyone and anything that will reinforce our load-bearing beliefs that we already have in place will be accepted by us. Anyone and anything not in harmony with those beliefs will be ignored or treated as a threat and, therefore, rejected by us. I had a wonderful day yesterday. Everything I was involved with turned out to be really excellent. Everything turned out really well. There was one exception, though. From a distance, I saw a man suddenly lift a very small child, maybe a 3-year-old, by one arm. To me, it looked like he jerked that child up into his arm. I immediately thought to myself, oh man, he might have hurt that child's arm and shoulder. My belief, don't hurt a child's arm and shoulder by that kind of a move. I don't know if that child was hurt. The man started kissing her all over and it looked playful, but maybe it was an attempt to comfort the child. It was obvious to me that there are beliefs, load-bearing beliefs, and no beliefs, right? There are beliefs, load-bearing beliefs, and no beliefs in regard to important areas of our lives. Let's take family as an area to consider. What beliefs do we have about the way children should be treated? This person certainly had a different belief than I had. How were we treated as children? How did we treat our own children? When my children were young and growing, I didn't know this definition of love, attention, respect, and appreciation. Those three elements comprise love. I didn't know that. Consequently, I had no beliefs about the need to deliver these aspects of love to them. I also didn't have a clear understanding of their needs regarding growth, nutrition and nourishment, healing, protection, fulfillment of need, work, survival, rhythm, and the law of cause and effect. And guess what? I didn't know about those things. I didn't teach them anything about those things intentionally, and I didn't even know that they pertained to me. So I was largely in a no-belief zone of ignorance, of unawareness. When no beliefs are predominant in our lives, we're bouncing impulsively or compulsively between thoughts and feelings, words and actions that at a moment's notice appear that, oh, this is going to make me happy. Oh, this is going to make me happy. Oh, this is going to keep me safe. This is going to keep me safe. That's going to make me happy. And we think, if we're thinking at all, that those things are the way to build a healthy, happy, successful life. Today I have the intention of developing a mini course on family relationships. I've mind mapped some important points, well, I think they're important, that I want to make in this mini course. I also mind map a set of questions that, by answering those questions, I should be able to weave in the points I want to make. So that's what I'm thinking. Today I picked up a sheet with one of those mind maps on it. I immediately bumped into a belief. I don't know how to do this perfectly. These points are not perfect. These questions are not perfect. If that idea is a load-bearing belief, things have to be perfect before we can start, I'm being handicapped by that. If you have that, you would be handicapped by that. There's no such thing in a practical sense as perfection. And the goal is not at the beginning of a journey to be perfect, but maybe look down the road and the end of the road, at the end of the journey, at the end of all this effort, that the final result is pretty close to excellent. Not going to be perfect, but it could be excellent. But that is not at the very first step of a journey. That's later on down the line. We certainly would want to enjoy the steps in the journey, as compared to postpone it, and then think we're going to get all kinds of joy at the end and never having experienced it on any step of the journey. That doesn't make any sense to me. And frankly, we would run out of steam way before then, and we would quit. It occurs to me that every journey, every project, requires one thing for certain. The only essential thing is to start. Starting is more important than planning, thinking things through, organizing, making to-do lists, writing things down, talking about it, on and on and on. Starting. We can do all those other activities, right? We could do them. But if we don't start, nothing will come of it. By starting, other needs are going to be obvious to us. We'll go, oh, I need other resources. Oh, I need to do this. Oh, I have to adjust here. I got to ask somebody this. I need more information here. All of that is going to become known. It would be impossible to know everything that we're going to encounter on a journey that we haven't started. Not going to happen. I go back to wondering how many load-bearing beliefs are needed to start building a workable structure. The chairs at my dining room table have four legs, and those things are designed to bear the weight of the chair itself. They're pretty ponderous, and they're designed to handle the weight of a person sitting on it. My office chair, which swivels and rolls, has five legs and feet, presumably for better stability, because it's going to be moving. Now, I've seen three-legged stools, but they tend to be small. They tend not to be really built to handle heavy loads. So, with this idea in mind, let's choose four load-bearing beliefs as the standard number that we have to have about our family, our money, our attempts to be more, about our attempts to try to avoid becoming less, about our intelligence, about our ability to express ourselves, about our worth, about the value that we can bring to the world. And that list can go on. Let's just choose four load-bearing beliefs for each of those. If we could design those, that would be pretty cool. We would have a level of self-knowledge that's would put us in a very, very small percentage of people. Maybe the main question that will lead to more questions that I just covered would be this. What are the load-bearing beliefs of your current state of your self-esteem in any one of these areas? It's like, when it comes down to it, the way we perceive the world is what makes the world be what it appears to be to us. Our perception is what makes that occur. Our perceptions equal our realities. Now, that for me is a load-bearing belief. We're far more creative, and by creative I don't just mean imaginative, I mean causative, literally and physically, practically causative, with our thoughts, feelings, words, and actions, than most of us are aware of. This is another load-bearing belief for me. I describe energy exchange experiences frequently, but I haven't really described precisely why we do it. I describe how we do it. Sure, I talk about energy acquisition, energy preservation, energy translation, energy expression, energy release, and closure. I do. But I bet I could describe the why as this. The purpose for energy exchange experiences is to gather energy through experience to be able to construct beliefs that would enable the effective physical manifestation of desirable physical effects. I believe that's what we're all trying to do. So I'm going to say it again because it's a fairly complicated sentence. The purpose of energy exchange experiences are to gather energy through experience to be able to construct beliefs that would enable the effective physical manifestations of desirable physical effects. It's like, oh, yeah, that's it. I'm gathering information as I interact with a piece of software or a person or anything else for that matter. And as a result of that experience, I'm like, I'm making this rule up. I'm creating a belief. I'm the load-bearing belief that is going to facilitate my effective functioning in life. I see a connection in load-bearing beliefs and our expectations and our intentions and our communications. I accept this idea that upsets and conflicts will be due to one or two or three of these conditions. One, unfulfilled expectations. Two, thwarted intentions. Three, undelivered or unreceived communication. But what if we have a load-bearing belief that we are not acceptable to others? In this case, our expectations would be that other people will reject us. But if we suddenly found acceptance from other people, would we be upset because our expectation was unfulfilled? I don't think so. That probably wouldn't bother us very much. Maybe this load-bearing belief would have led us to the intention, right? People don't accept me. It got us to the intention that we're going to do battle when we interact with these people. So these non-accepting people better get ready for me because I'm all loaded for bear. I'm going to fight them, and I'm going to deliver angry communication if I have to in order to defend myself and, you know, kind of prevent emotional or physical attack or criticism. So I'm all geared up for that. But since the rejection didn't occur in the first scenario, it's like, my intention to do battle with these people and the communication that I was going to deliver are not going to happen. My intention is going to be thwarted and my communication is not going to be delivered because I'm not at war with them. Oh, would we be upset or conflicted about that? Probably not. Maybe the real takeaway in this talk would be to each of us to identify four, and you already heard my explanation why I would choose four load-bearing beliefs about the 12 worlds. What four load-bearing beliefs do you have in the spiritual world? That is your relationship with your source of being, about your mentality, your mind, your intelligence. What four beliefs do you have about emotions and yours specifically? What do you have in the way of four load-bearing beliefs about your physicality, your body, your looks, your arms and legs, and your appearance? And what four load-bearing beliefs do you have about your family and your career and money and finances and your socializing and leisure, community, political, maintenance worlds? What four load-bearing beliefs could you identify? And as if that's not enough, I would say, let's look at our needs. I use this structure: survival, freedom, usefulness, love, identity, plus the need to be right and the need to look good, get approval. I call that Sfuli, S-F-U-L-I, plus two. What are your beliefs about your survival? Load-bearing beliefs. We've got lots of beliefs, right? I could say, what do you believe about vanilla ice cream? That, chances are, that's not a load-bearing belief. But we're talking about load-bearing belief, these rigid things that give support to the structure. If you wanted to go even further, we could look at the four driving needs of the ego that's expressed through the personality that Christ describes in Christ Returns Reveals Startling Truth. This driving need to come in first in the race of life and push other people aside in our attempts to do that. Take the best for ourselves. Defend ourselves from criticism, emotional, physical attack, and to hold on to our possessions. All of these driving needs are active to one degree or another, and our beliefs about them make them powerful, strong, and controlling in our lives. And if we can revise them, if we can renovate them, we can update them, we're going to be better off. When people tell me that they feel unsupported and they don't know how they're going to bear the loads they have in their life, I have these thoughts. I have these thoughts of being supported. And the sequence of images goes something like this. Typically, I'm sitting on a chair. The chair is supporting me. The chair is sitting on the floor. The floor is supporting the chair, which is supporting me. The floor is sitting on a concrete slab here in Florida, which is supporting the floor, which is supporting the chair, which is supporting me. The concrete slab is sitting on the earth, which is supporting it. The earth, of course, is supporting me. It produces the air I breathe and the food I eat, the water I drink, and the materials that go into the shelter that I have above my head. And that list can go on and on and on. Like, I am being supported. You are being supported. We're all being supported by a loving, creative, intelligent power. If we think of that, revise those words, a loving, intelligent, creative power, an intelligently loving, creative power, that set of words give rise to a tremendously powerful, load-bearing belief that puts us in a position of experiencing safety, fulfillment of need, growth, all those other things that the divine is seeking to provide for us to ensure our well-being. Load-bearing beliefs. If what we're building, our self-esteem, our self-image, and our view of the world is not satisfactory yet, it's time for renovation. We don't have to drop the entire structure like a Las Vegas building, but we can remove erroneous designs, the beliefs that we've adopted that have been given to us that don't support our sense of who we are and what we are and our source of being. We can renovate that. Believing we can do something about it to improve our lives and the lives of other people is a load-bearing belief that we're going to want to have that becomes stronger and more active in our lives. I'd like to end the service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version of the prayer from Letter 8 in Christ Returns Reveals Startling Truth. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. Get that as a load-bearing belief. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. Get that as a load-bearing belief. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, We know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal, loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. Get that as a load-bearing belief. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness, and as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. Get that as a load-bearing belief. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.